And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 20th, 2022. The global carbon dioxide concentration is 421.59 parts per million, and there are 2,872 days left until the year 2030. So we are all involved in what we would call the energy transition. As a state of Massachusetts, as a country, as a society, we need to get to greener and cleaner energy as soon as possible. Of course, that's a narrative that we can fit. There's a story around that big transition. There's wins and losses, pluses and minuses, lessons learned. We are going to be involved in this for a long time. So it's good to view current events in the context of a long haul. There are a couple of big trends here in Massachusetts that bring that sort of concept down to a more specific kind of level. Massachusetts, the state of Massachusetts, has passed legislation requiring that the state reduce its carbon dioxide emissions, and in fact has passed laws that say the renewable energy component of our electricity will increase by 3% every year, right? So there's serious legislation in Massachusetts forcing us towards getting more green energy. Flip side is that we all live and get our electricity from this opaque thing called a grid, which is heavily regulated because it is a state monopoly. In other words, the state of Massachusetts has given over authority and a monopoly to the grid to give us our electricity. That grid is charged with providing reliable energy, not green energy, but reliable energy. And there are various kinds of bureaucratic organizations within that grid that have the responsibility. Turns out that there's this group called ISO New England, which is the independent system operator for New England of the electricity grid. And they are charged with running what's called the market. Again, these are all kind of buzzwords, but basically they're charged with figuring out who's going to be making electricity 2 years from now. And as part of that process of accepting bids to make electricity 2 or 3 years from now, they have chosen to basically rig the auction in a way that forces renewable energies to not be allowed to bid in and be on the grid in 2 years. This is something, it's an arcane acronym. It's called the Minimum Offer Price Rule. It's recently been promulgated. It's not a good thing. It will delay the implementation of green energy. So that's a story within this context of the transition to green energy over the next 10 years, right? What are we going to do with this problem, this sort of collision between the bureaucracy, what the state wants to do, back and forth? Since I don't know very much about it, I only know what I read in the papers, we thought it would be useful to talk to an expert, someone who does know this area very well. And so we're pleased to have with us Melissa Burchard, who is a senior regulatory attorney for Power Grid Reform, which is an impressive title, with the Acadia Center, which is a nonprofit here in Massachusetts. So Melissa, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me, Ted.
So I gave that little story about what I think is the big picture of how ISO New England is restricting renewable energy. Did I get it right? Tell me the real story, or I'd explain it in a way that I, and maybe if you could tell me what's the Acadia Center as well, the organization you're working with. Why are you involved in this discussion at all?
Sure, I'm glad to talk this through with you. First, Acadia Center is a nonprofit organization, as you mentioned, that is based in New England, and we work for clean energy and decarbonization in the region. We do this through research and analysis, through policy advocacy, and also through alliances with all sorts of diverse partners. And my job at Acadia Center is to focus on this kind of large-scale reform of our clean energy system, the transition you were just talking about. So you got it right that we have this tension between state policy and what's happening at the regional level. Now, the rule that we're talking about here, this minimum offer price rule, which is often shortened to the kind of fun acronym MOPR. The MOPR has been in place for a while, and it's very outdated. It needs to go. As you mentioned, it does hold back clean energy in the region. So that's kind of the overall landscape there. That's what you said.
So tell me, what I've seen, so this minimum offer price rule, MOPR, MOPR, as you say, that was instituted, at least from what I've read, in order to protect fossil fuel electricity generation from essentially the state policy of Massachusetts, which is incentivizing, giving money to the wind turbine guys to get out there and build a wind turbine. ISO New England is saying, oh, well, we have to protect the natural gas plants from that competition. And it's almost like sabotaging the state's plans. Is that a fair estimation?
So the MOPR, the concept behind it is to avoid market manipulation, but the effect of it is something different. It's outdated. As I mentioned, it needs to go. The minimum offer price rule, or MOPR, has the effect of excluding clean energy from the capacity market. And we can talk about what a capacity market is and why we need one. Or at least why we're using that now.
That would be great. Can you say, I mean, what is a capacity market? I mean, I find this stuff so abstract, right, and so far out in the future that your eyes roll back in your head. I mean, we're talking about a minimum price in this forward capacity market. What does that even mean?
Sure. So a forward capacity market is a way to look forward and develop a pipeline of energy resources 3 years in advance. So this is important for a number of reasons. First, it can take time to get energy resources built, right? We have to plan ahead to lock in the amount and the type of additional resources we need in order to maintain a reliable grid. ISO New England's forward capacity market uses an auction to select the energy resources we need. So for example, next year, ISO New England will hold an auction that's called Forward Capacity Auction 17. Or FCA 17 for short. And the goal of that action will be to choose energy resources for the period that begins in 2026 and ends in 2027. So we're talking about an auction in 2023 that looks 3 years out and says, what can we put on our energy system 3 years from now and lock it in now?
And when they talk about a capacity market, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the jargon means the capacity to make electricity, right? So they're talking about the, because you can't like store up electricity yet, right? It's going to be, these guys think in terms of how much ability, how much capacity do they have to manufacture electricity in the moment. And now they're worried about, are they going to have enough power plants in the year 2026, right? So that's the capacity you're talking about, right? Is that a fair statement?
That's right. So we have this landscape of demand versus production, right? And we got to match the two. And so we're looking forward. We're saying, well, what's the demand going to be? And can we match it so that we have what we need in 3 years? And so there's an auction like this every year. The purpose is to lock in enough generation to meet future consumer demand. It's how we keep the lights on, but it's also how we choose the resources that will serve our community in the future. And that's really a key fact. So what we do today in an auction that's planning 3 years ahead locks our communities into a specific generation mix. And if we lock in gas and we exclude clean energy, then that's what we're going to have 3 to 4 years from now.
From what I've read, here's another acronym, FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, right, which is notorious for various other reasons, they made a request to this ISO New England group to remove this MOPR rule, this minimum offer price rule. Is that true?
It's not quite as simple as that, but what we have is three regions in the country that had a minimum offer price rule. And the chairman of FERC and some of the commissioners of FERC have said, you know, we think those are outdated. We think they should go away. And so we had the other two regions of the country that had this kind of outdated rule already come in and move towards getting rid of this. So Iceland and England is the last one. And yes, there's increasing consensus that we need to get rid of this. Just to take a step back, you know, ISO New England, which is the one that kind of implements this rule and in its essence creates this rule or can change this rule, they are in charge of New England's electric transmission grid, but also its wholesale power markets. And so what we're talking about here is one of those markets, right? So it plans and operates the interstate electric transmission grid in New England, and it manages wholesale electricity markets. And in doing so, it sets a whole bunch of rules. Those rules are then reviewed and approved by what you mentioned, the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is a source of ISO New England's authority. And the reason it's the source of ISO New England's authority is because the transmission grid and the wholesale markets, they're interstate. They're not just one state. They cross over more than one state. So that's kind of how we end up with these competing perspectives of the state versus the region or the federal government.
Because ISO New England, forgive me for interrupting, covers Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. So it's New England and not just Massachusetts. And just to reiterate what you said, the ISO, the Independent Systems Operator, ISO New England, they are kind of a creature of FERC. They're made by, they're authorized by FERC, but they have sort of independent authority. I mean, they can make decisions independent of FERC, right?
They do make decisions independent of FERC, but to be clear, you know, rules like this have to be approved by FERC, and changes to rules like this have to be approved by FERC. So, you know, that's what we're looking at here. And when you mentioned that, you know, folks are coming out and asking FERC to revise these outdated rules, yes, two other regions have already done so, and ISO New England is the last. Go ahead.
I was going to say the minimum offer price rule, which is this. So there's an offer price. So in my head, tell me if I'm wrong. I want to build a wind turbine off of Martha's Vineyard, right? Okay, I'm going to build some wind turbines. I think it's going to cost me 10 cents per electron, right? So I would then go to ISO and say, in 2 years, Mr. ISO, I can give you electrons at 10 cents a piece. Do you want them? They're cheap. And it seems like ISO New England comes back and says, no, I want you to charge me a dollar for that electron. There's a minimum price of a dollar. And therefore, I don't want your bit. I don't want your stinking wind turbine, right? Is that a fair description of, I mean, the minimum offer price rule seems so arcane, right? What's the justification for it, and why does it still exist?
That's a good question. So it is something a little bit like that, right? We don't want to have market manipulation in our market. So sometimes it's important to have rules to control against market manipulation. But this rule clearly excludes clean energy from the capacity market and keeps us from putting that into our landscape in a cost-effective way. So, you know, the minimum offer price rule sets an artificial price floor and tells clean energy resources they can't bid in below that number. The original purpose of the rule was to avoid market manipulation, but now it has the effect of maintaining the position of incumbent fossil fuel generators against new, potentially cheaper clean energy resources entering into and competing in the market. So what should be an open competitive market is not an open competitive market, and it doesn't secure the cheapest, best resources for us. So, you know, because many clean energy resources receive state or federal recognition for their clean energy attributes, whether that's in the form of RECs or power purchase agreements or something else, then these resources are prohibited under the MOPR rule from bidding in at their lowest possible price. And so incumbent fossil fuel generators will win and clean energy can't compete in that landscape. That being said, the ISO proposed last May of 2021 to eliminate the MOPR. And they proposed to do that this year in 2022. So, you know, ISO New England also realizes that the MOPR is in conflict with state policy, that it's harming people, that it's harming state policy, and that it can't go on. But at the last minute, a couple of weeks ago, ISO New England decided to back a two-year delay in eliminating the MOPR. That was requested by gas generators. So we have this sudden decision to delay eliminating a rule that keeps clean energy out of our market.
Do you, I mean, that sounds nefarious. Do you think that there was some self-interest pushing that, or is this just, so you're saying that ISO New England was going to do the right thing up till about 2 weeks ago, and then all of a sudden it got scared and decided, no, we have to keep this rule in place for another 2 years and delay renewable energy. Any idea why they made that move? Although, I mean, there's a request from the natural gas electricity generators, right? But did they have that? Did they make a good case?
Did ISO New England make a good case?
Make a good case that this was market manipulation to have state policy?
So, yeah, I think there's pretty broad consensus that the MOPR has to go. And so the gas generators were losing out on that. And this was kind of a last-ditch effort to hold on for a little bit longer. It's not clear exactly what they get out of this, but it does delay elimination of the MOPR for a couple more years. It may be a lifeline to some gas generators, and they saw it as kind of a last-ditch effort, given that momentum was against them, right, in terms of getting rid of the MOPR. Why ISO New England changed its position at the last minute is unclear. They said they had concerns about an orderly transition, potential reliability concerns, but there wasn't a lot of evidence there. And so it's not clear to me, at least, exactly why that happened. But the other thing that's important to know is that the states also changed their position at the last minute. They still want to get rid of the MOPR, to be clear. But what they announced at the last minute was, we won't oppose a delay. And this kind of caused people to scratch their heads and say, what's going on? All of a sudden, the states say, we won't oppose a two-year delay to the MOPR, which, you know, the states have been asking to get rid of the MOPR for a long time. So why did they suddenly change their position? And ultimately, you know, other regions are getting rid of their MOPR. We're already behind the other regions, and now we're looking at another two-year delay unless there's a change at FERC to this decision.
Well, that raises the question then. People listening to this show, it sounds like the gods on Mount Olympus are fighting each other over something, right? The states, there's this committee formulated by the New England states is just talking to ISO, and there's FERC down in Washington. What can people do? I mean, what's the leverage point that someone like myself, who gets all wound up about these things, you know, who can you talk to? What can people do?
Sure. It's important that people pay attention to these issues because it affects us all. It affects our communities. It affects what we pay with our electric bills. It affects the air we breathe. It affects our kids who have asthma and our elderly who need clean and you know, safe environments. In terms of what people can do, you know, there's a couple things. First, they can ask FERC to eliminate the MOPR and to direct ISO New England to eliminate the MOPR as quickly as possible. So FERC is the ultimate decider here. And if FERC tells ISO New England to eliminate the MOPR as quickly as possible, then we can get back on track. Another thing people can do is tell their state political leaders and their state energy leaders that this decision was not okay, that we need clean energy in our regional market. And making these kinds of backroom decisions with no transparency, no accountability, no real explanation why this happened. I mean, I'm just as confused as you are about some of this. the bottom line is the states need to be accountable. And the ISO New England form is kind of this black box, right? People go in, they come back out, there's some decision. It's never clear exactly what happened in that black box. And even for people like me who go into that black box and come back out, there's a lot of non-transparency. And so we need to demand that the states take responsibility for their decisions and that the states push for reform at ISO New England. It's not enough to say we support decarbonization. And then when it comes down to the time for a decision, a real decision, to get scared and back away and say, oh, we didn't really mean it. We have to keep on track or we will not meet our decarbonization goal. We will be paying extra for our capacity. So what happens is when ISO New England goes out and runs its capacity auction, they're going to charge us for that, right? But at the same time, we're bringing on other resources and they're going to charge us for that too, right? And so we're going to end up paying more than we need to.
Interesting.
There's a lot of reasons why this is a bad decision and why the states need to stand firm.
Just to catch up with what you were saying, are you suggesting that state of Massachusetts is going to go ahead building wind turbines that they can't get on the grid and, because ISO New England has this antiquated rule, and therefore you're going to pay for both the wind turbines and the gas-powered plants you didn't want, right?
Yes. I certainly hope that we'll end up getting this on the grid in terms of getting it to where people need it to go. That's a whole nother question, right, for another day. But in terms of getting it into this capacity market, we've got a two-year delay. Does that mean it will never be able to participate? No, it means that we'll be paying, for the time being, we'll be paying extra. And we will not be getting the resources we want. Instead, we'll be getting, you know, this lifeline to gas generators.
Wow. So, dear listener, there you go. Petition FERC. What we'll do is I'm going to put some links up in the MCAN blog, right? It'll be two articles about this, but in particular, how to get in touch with FERC, right? They're on Twitter. They have email addresses, and people should be demanding that FERC take the reins here and do the right thing. And at the same time, asking our people in the State House to get involved, recognize this is an issue because everyone will dodge it, you know, until they're held accountable. So talking to your state representatives about what's going on here is an important thing. So I'm going to do that. I'd also ask everyone listening, if you have any questions about the podcast or things that we ought to be talking about, send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about. You can listen to the show on your smartphone using one of the many modern podcast distribution apps, with the exception nowadays of Spotify. You can find us on Apple. You can find us on Google. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector. I guess here we're talking about let's fix ISO New England. We have to do that over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, Melissa, thank you very much for taking the time to come on and explaining this MOPR rule. It's been very interesting and informative.
It was fun to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.